Once upon a time, a man sunk deep into an utterly dark, hope-crushing season. He went bankrupt. A number of his family members died in that same season. And some of his property was even wiped out. He was publicly disgraced and ridiculously ridiculed by friends. And from the depths of his suffering, Job asked this question: how can a man be in the right before God? What a powerful question. Have you ever asked it? Have you ever asked it in the face of your own dark seasons? Those times when so much seems so wrong about your circumstances and your own soul. Maybe you or someone you love is asking this right now. In Romans, the letter of the Romans, Paul spotlights just how marvelously good the gospel truly is. For him, for the Romans, for everyone, including you and me, we can personally experience what it's like to be right with God. And we can help others encounter the good news too. With our journey into Romans chapter 3 today, and I invite you to join me there, please. Romans 3, here's our big takeaway truth. Christ transforms us from wrong to right. Trust him and tell others. Christ transforms us from wrong to right. Trust him and tell others. Romans 3, let's discover more of Christ's marvelous goodness. Along with these discoveries today, I'll share a vital gospel-sharing tool. A gospel-sharing tool so that, like Paul in his day and Jesus in his lifetime, we in our lifetime can live intentionally on mission in greater proximity to others who truly, truly need to encounter the gracious good news. Romans 3, 1 and 2, Paul says, then what advantage has the Jew, or what is the value of circumcision? Much in every way. To begin with, the Jews were entrusted with the oracles of God. In chapter 2 of Romans, Paul took us to court. We saw it last time together. We went to court. We entered the courtroom together. And Paul used legal lingo about judgmental moralists and lawless Gentiles and ultra-religious circumcised Jews. Paul argues that everyone is self-seeking, sinful, proud, and deserving of God's judgment. Everyone. And as we were wrapping up last time together, we saw it. True righteousness is an inside-out work of heart. It's essential that we let the Lord do his deep work of heart deep inside us, that we open up, that we receive his work deep inside of our souls. It's not really all about the externals. It's about living inside out. Opening of chapter 3, Paul entertains a set of questions. We might imagine that court has gone into recess and he steps out on the front steps of the courthouse to hold a press conference for a few minutes. And here's his first question. So, is there really any upside for Jews, God's special people? The Apostle Paul's answer, yes, great advantage, starting with how they were entrusted with divine promises. God's oracles, our translation says. Now, this trust, faith, word group runs like a thick thread in Paul's legal case. These words like trust, faith, and trusted, the sacred scrolls of Hebrew covenant included the promises to the patriarchs, promises of God's own character, and promises of the coming Messiah. So, big advantage, Paul says. They were entrusted. Entrusted. And the root of this word is the same as those words for faith and faithful and trust and trustworthy. It's a word group. But this advantage only served, Paul says, it only served to highlight how unfaithful, untrustworthy God's people had been. Verses 3 and 4, he says, what if some were unfaithful? Does their faithlessness nullify the faithfulness of God? By no means, he says, verse 4. Let God be true, though everyone were a liar. Anybody ever grow up in a home where if you were caught telling a fib, mom or dad or grandma said, liar, liar, pants on fire? He says here, let every man, though every man's a liar, let God be true. As it is written, note that. He reaches back to one of these ancient divine oracles. He says, as it is written, that you may be justified in your words and prevail when you are judged. A knowledgeable Jew himself, Paul quotes from Psalm 51. Psalm 51, David's famous psalm of confession. David, feeling the weight of God's judgment when he had sinned, both adultery and murder, David had right here a responsive heart. He came clean in confession. It's vital we realize that Paul did not originate this legal imagery, this concept of God as judge. He did not conjure this up on his own. Back in the ancient Hebrew scrolls, God is spoken of as the judge and the one who justifies. Genesis 18:25, Psalm 96:13, Joel 3, verse 12, and numerous other ancient texts spotlight God as the judge and the one who justifies. Back in Paul's press conference, the question posed expresses the twisted human reasoning. Well, does faithless character and conduct by God's people nullify God's faithfulness? Is God untrustworthy because his people are untrustworthy? Because they didn't prove true, maybe God isn't true. And Paul's answer? By no means. It's one of his favorite comebacks in writing Romans. No way! Of course not! God forbid! God is still true. Human faithlessness does not negate God's faithfulness. That's an important truth for all of us to get a hold of. You've probably noticed it already in life. Other people can be amazingly untrustworthy and unfaithful. And let you down and fail in incredible ways. And we've all seen that in others, and we've all been there ourselves. But faithlessness on the part of other people doesn't negate God's faithfulness, truly. And so we keep trusting him, and we keep pursuing his ways. Paul heard his share of twisted human reasoning. And so he posed a couple more questions. Verses 5 through 8. The crux of his questions go like this. Isn't God unfair to judge when our sinning actually serves to spotlight his righteousness? The thinking went like this. Actually, my self-consumed living shows more of how good he is. And so it brings him glory. So how could he judge me? How could I be guilty before him? And Paul's conclusion, absolutely not. crummy reasoning, he says. Faulty human thinking. In fact, he says it's worthy of condemnation. So wrong. With verse 9, he summarizes. What then? Are we Jews any better off? No, not at all, for we have already charged. Here we go, some more judgment lingo. We have already charged that all, both Jews and Greeks, are under sin. Now, pause right here for a moment in Paul's press conference and take stock. Take stock. Too many people today are letting false, loopy, convoluted rationale shape their way of viewing life, making up supposed moral and spiritual decisions to guide their way and even to determine their destiny for all of eternity. Paul knew this because he responded passionately to Jesus sending him. And so Paul got very close to people. And he grasped how they lived, how they thought. He grasped how they lived their daily lives, flowing from how they thought. And so he could conclude, all are under the power of sin. Now, it's important we understand. Paul thought of sin as personified, like an actual person. He thought of sin that way, like a villainous character. Think of maybe the most villainous character you've ever seen in some grand epic tale, or maybe even a kid animated version of one, like who remembers Rasputin in Anastasia? Paul viewed sin like that. Paul viewed sin as crafty and deceptive and able to sneak in as something that could take over in our lives. Overbearing, enslaving, an enslaving personality of sin, and we're going to see him talk more about this in coming chapters. So as a result, all people need Jesus. All people need Jesus. Tool time. I want to urge you to pick this tool up for greater gospel sharing, for gaining closer proximity to people who need to trust King Jesus and his gospel message. Now, this tool is both simple and profoundly important. It's called cultural distance. Cultural distance tool. It's a way of seeing all people and assessing relationships more effectively. So, here's church. That's folks like us gathered like this. And gathered in other settings as well, church. And here are other people who need Jesus' grace and righteousness. Wonderful people. People in our daily lives, our neighborhoods, our sports teams, our workplaces, our coffee shops, the golf course, and our broader families. Precious folks. And they have all sorts of reasons. Okay, and so this big yardstick, you can imagine this thing just going longer and longer and longer. This big measuring rod in the middle, it's all kinds of reasons for the distance. Might be things like busyness. Anybody know anybody busy in life? Yeah, busyness just consumes people's lives. It can be assumptions. Some people assume that church is boring. Not our church, of course, but everybody else's church, right? Political bias. It's a big part of distance these days. Political bias and stigma. Because, see, people everywhere assume, oh, all those Christians, they just fill in the blank. And usually it's the opposite of whatever they personally believe politically. Another big distance spot is self-confidence and success. Now, self-confidence can be really good, right? Success in life can be really good, right? But at times it becomes this distance between them and God and spirituality, and that can happen and sneak in like crafty sin in any of our lives. Self-confidence and success. Habits. Habits jump onto the big distance rod here. We all have habits, some of them really good, some of them are really bad. Habits jump in. Fun entertainment. fun entertainment. And entertainment can be great too. We all love some good entertainment, but can also create big distance spiritually. Another one of the hash marks here on the distance rod can be stew-like mix of religion. Oh, religion in our day is such a stew, right? It's like a big kettle on the back burner of the stove, and people just love to mix in a little of this and a little of that and this viewpoint, that supposed spiritual practice, and it all just kind of mixes in, becomes this messy soup, stew. Creates distance between true God and truly seeking and knowing Jesus. There can even be on this distance marker involvement in good creative endeavors. You know, good endeavors are good endeavors and creative, and that's awesome. But all of these and more represent distance. Note, not all are evil. Some of them are just deeply embedded cultural practices. Now, commonly we think, commonly we think somehow we've just got to get them to come to us. What we really need to do is, like Paul and like Jesus, awaken to the reality that we are sent every day. That we are sent every day with the good news, to both be good news and proclaim it. And then we intentionally, consistently go to them. We deliberately, very intentionally, fly in the face of what we commonly think about. They ought to come to us. We just got to figure out how to get them here. No, we do the Jesus-like action. We go to them deliberately, more and more intentionally. And it's there that we invest patient, loving, rich time with them, building friendships and growing mutual trust together and expressing then Christ's loving truth in our deeds and our words. More and more about Jesus' amazing way to both view life and do life. Forgiven, right, and redeemed by King Jesus. Remember, Christ transforms us from wrong to right. So trust him and tell others. Now, we're going to revisit this tool and a couple of others across this series in future weeks, but right now, let's jump back to Romans chapter 3. Romans 3, Paul returns to the courtroom. He leaves the courtroom steps, holding his press conference, goes back in, court's back in session. Listen to where Paul goes in verses 10 through 18. He says, as it is written, none is righteous, no, not one. No one understands. No one seeks for God. All have turned aside. Together they have become worthless. No one does good, not even one. Their throat is an open grave. They use their tongues to deceive. The venom of asps is under their lips. Their mouth is full of curses and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. In their paths are ruin and misery. In the way of peace they have not known. Verse 18, there is no fear of God before their eyes. Paul delivers a 14-count indictment, quoting from rich selections of ancient words, those ancient oracles of God he referenced. Psalm 14, Psalm 53, Isaiah 59. And with each of these, we get these indicting words of wrong, of evil, of wickedness. But with each of these Old Testament quotes, Paul knows the context. And the context in each of them goes like this. God will act to rescue and save. God will act to rescue and save. But the human condition and character, conversation and conduct is thoroughly corrupt. Verses 19 and 20, Romans 3, he renders the verdict. Now we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be stopped and the whole world may be held accountable to God. For by works of the law, verse 20, no human being will be justified in his sight, since through the law comes knowledge of sin. The New Living Translation delivers it like this. The entire world is guilty before God. For no one can ever be made right with God by doing what the law commands. The law simply shows us how sinful we are. See, inside us, a knowledge lamp suddenly blazes with light. Oh God, I know I am a sinner, deserving of your judgment. Before God the judge, hands over mouths. No more excuses or loopy human reasoning. Guilty. No matter how good and religious we try to be, we are not right in God's sight on our own. Guilty. Desperately dark, dreadfully dismal. Chains are on. The walls are pressing in. World is getting smaller and smaller. Star Wars. Any Star Wars fans in the room? Star Wars: A New Hope. Luke, Leia, Han, and Chewie are stuck in the trash compactor. Remember the scene? And you've got the trash monster sliding around down there and trying to suck different ones underneath all the trash. And the walls are crushing in. They need delivered. Hobbits traveling far-flung places of Middle Earth. Oh, wow. Desolate places. And will Gandalf and the elves come to rescue them? Will they show up or not? Lois Lane gets captured by Lex Luthor. Time is ticking. Often a time bomb is ticking. Where is Superman? Don't miss what Paul says next. Verse 21. Two utterly game-changing words. But now. And in the ancient language, these words, they are so pronounced. But now, the righteousness of God has been manifested apart from the law, although the law and the prophets bear witness to it. Right here is the pivot, the rescue in the biggest story of all. God's righteousness, God's righteous one. Who enjoys eating out? Eating out. Who likes eating out? Okay, now, last week and this week, we've been talking a lot of judgment, okay? But right now, for a few moments, no judge zone, okay? Who likes occasionally eating at a big old buffet? Like a feeding trough, okay? All right, so some of you are like, no, I don't get my money's worth. Okay, I respect that, I get that. How about a sit-down family-style splurge every so often? Like, you sit down to a family-style splurge. Okay, all right. Have you ever been to one of those Brazilian steakhouses? All right, so you know what I'm talking about, right? Years ago, when I was traveling, I was with friends, and I had never been to such a place before. And we go in. Now, you got to understand, somebody else was paying, so that this made it extra good, right? Okay, extra good. And there's a salad bar, an opulent salad bar, and there's cheese and bread, and I love cheese and bread. But the one friend with me looks at me, he knew that, and he looks at me and he says, "Don't eat much cheese and bread." And I'm like, why? And he's like, "Wait and see." And within a few minutes, the waiters start coming around. And any of you who've been there, you know what's coming, right? Some of you are grinning, because what? The most amazing meat in every incarnation, and much of it wrapped in bacon and glazed in all kinds of ways. And I was like, oh, no, who would ever go to a salad bar at a place like this? That's ridiculous. No cheese and bread, no way. Right here, Paul treats us to amazing cuts of meat. Stunning, amazing, good. Incredible meat. Right here. Remember, Christ transforms us from wrong to right. So trust him and tell others. Now, here's this piece of meat. Watch this. The core Greek word for the words righteousness, justify, just, and justification. It's the same root word for all of these. Righteousness is core character, God's faithful aim to make things right in our lives and our world. All that's gone so wrong. It's the righteous one, Jesus, his holy motivation to do what is wholly just, gracious, redeeming, bondage-breaking, recreating, setting things that are so unrighteous, truly right. And the righteous one, Jesus, does exactly that. Incredible, amazing meat. What happens right here? It's an invasion. It's the wondrous intervention we need. It's what happens when all looks dark and hopeless. But then Gandalf arrives on Shadowfax, or Superman swoops in to save Lois Lane. And that's exactly what Paul shows us about Jesus in verse 22. He says, the righteousness of God through faith in Jesus Christ for all who believe, for there is no distinction. We access God's right-making for us, for the world. Paul stresses it's for all who believe, and all means all. No distinction. How do we access? Through faith. Through faith in King Jesus, the promised Messiah. We believe. We trust him and his promise to settle the horrific sin tragedy and make us right in God's sight. Remember Job's old question? Here's the answer, the rescue, our superhero savior, deliverer, Jesus Christ. Here's more bacon-wrapped meat coming our way. In God's big, beautiful, divine story, faith. It's not nebulous. It's not fuzzy. It's not something passed down in your family line like, our family's faith is Lutheran, or our family's faith is Brethren, or Buddhist, or Baptist, or Taoist, or Catholic. No. Faith in King Jesus. Faith in King Jesus is way more personal, transformative, deep in your heart. It means trust, confidence in who Jesus is and what he did on the cross to right the wrong of our sin through his blood, how he took our wrath and our judgment. All who believe, so you're in God's family, his tribe, if you activate faith. And faith is more, so much more than a noun. It's way more than a system of knowledge. It's way more than some worship club. You know, it is awesome to gather like this every Sunday. And some of you find yourselves on this campus like multiple times during the week. That's good. But the danger with that can be that we jump in our thinking that we somehow belong to this faith club. And we miss activating the actual faith. You know, many words are like this. Many words have a noun form, but also a verb form. Fake is one. We say something is a fake. And also someone can fake it. Face. Oh, you have a face. Touch your face for a moment. Not your neighbor's face, just your face. And you face things. You turn and you face into a problem, or you face upward to greet the sun in the morning. You face it. How about we learn to say more than, I have a faith? How about we learn to say, I faith it? I trust Christ. Remember, Christ transforms us from wrong to right. So we trust him and we tell others. With verse 23, Paul explains even more. There's more meat. Oh, and some of this gets so bacon wrapped. Ooh. Paul explains even more. He says, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. In case you have missed it, Paul won't let us miss the urgency, our dark, dramatic dilemma. Everyone falls short, even worse than the Philadelphia Phillies right now. Everyone misses the holy mark. God's glorious character and actions. John's gospel, the apostle John, John 1 tells us how Jesus came to earth as embodiment, God's glory, full of grace and truth. And we all fall short of living like Jesus. That said, Paul continues verse 24 and says, and are justified. We all fall short, but all are justified by his grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus. Oh, wow. Here come the meat platters again. Justified. We met this billion-dollar biblical legal lingo in chapter 2 last time. It means declared right in God's sight. The judgment is rendered, and the judgment is declared right in God's sight. The judge says this person is in the right. He or she gets to walk free. Walk free. Whole new settled status for this one who seemed so guilty, so condemned. Now they get to walk free. Paul says this is gracious gift. Grace is kindness, lavish kindness. We can't earn it. We don't on our own deserve it. Gift. What's the deal with an honest gift? Well, it's not complicated. It's given by a loving giver, and someone just needs to receive it with a full, open, and grateful heart. I went early to my wife Nance's play yesterday afternoon downtown, and I got there early enough, and I'm talking with several people and interacting with one of the guys who was working the door, letting people in, and I had slid into the cafe next door and grabbed a coffee. I know you're shocked at that. And I had a mug in hand, and I'm this guy, he's looking at me, and I could tell he was kind of like, ooh, that coffee looks good. He was just kind of staring at my mug, and I it was a chilly, rainy day, and I'm working this coffee, and I could see by the look in his eye, and I smiled, and I said, I'll go next door and grab you one. He was working the door. I said, I'll go get you one. You want a coffee? And for a moment, you could tell he was like scanning me, like, is this a sincere offer or not? You know, and I smiled and I just nodded my head and he looked at me and he goes, yeah, I'd really like that. So I go back in, I get him a coffee, come out, give him the mug. Well, all of a sudden there's a couple of other people in the room like staring at both of us and looking at me. And I looked at them and I said, I'll get you each one too. And you could tell the scan went on, and then they went, no, I don't need it. No. Gift offered. One person receptive, others no. This gift, friends, it's not complicated. You just got to open up and receive it. You just got to open up and say, yes, I receive it. Honest gift, given by the loving giver. Just receive it with a full, open, grateful heart. Now, the wait staff isn't done at our Brazilian restaurant. Watch how they show up with some more cuts of tender, juicy steak. And some of you are saying, John, if you are really a great giver, you'll just take us all the steak after this. Sorry, I can splurge for coffee, but there's coffee out here for free, by the way, when you're... Redemption. Redemption that is in Christ Jesus. Now, our day, we hear redemption in our culture, but it's wimpy, really. You redeem points at the gas pump in order to... I know. We appreciate that, right? We save on some gas right now, especially. But it's wimpy compared to biblical times. Or you redeem points to get your Easter ham. You redeem your points. In Paul's time and before, redemption was always costly. It involved blood. It involved a high price. Redemption was costly. Even all the way back to Moses and the Exodus, redemption happened when someone bought a person out of their doomed, chained condition. A price was paid to free an enslaved individual and set them into a new family, set them into a new land, take them into a new place, whole new situation. Because a high price was paid, they were redeemed. Jesus described himself as a payment for others, for us. Mark 10, 45, Jesus said, "For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." To the Corinthians, Paul said, "You were bought with a high price, so glorify God in your body." Such freedom is what happens when people trust in the only true and faithful righteous one, the Messiah, King Jesus, Savior, Deliverer. Trust what he did for you on the cross. Trust what he did for you on the cross. What did he do? Paul elaborates even more. Even more Brazilian meat. 25a. Whom God put forward as a propitiation by his blood to be redeemed by faith. Atoning sacrifice. Atoning sacrifice. Propitiation conjures the concept of the Israelite temple, the mercy seat, atonement for sin, a lamb's life and blood in the sinner's place, a life sacrificed to pay the penalty. On the cross, King Jesus' blood atoned for our sin, my sin, your sin. His body taking our place, and the Father's just wrath, your judgment and mine. Because of Christ, his mercy on the cross, then your faith in his work there. You need not live condemned. We read these words of condemnation. But you need not live a day of your life, one more day of your life, sensing you're condemned or under judgment because of what Jesus did for you. Truly, he is the righteous one. He gave his life for you. No more fear of judgment. Christ Jesus took your sin, your wrath, your hell, your judgment, his blood for you. Verse 25b and following, this was to show... Note it, this was to show God's righteousness. This was to show God's righteousness because in his divine forbearance, he had passed over former sins. Formerly, all the sacrificial lambs were pointing forward. People looking toward and trusting the coming Messiah, the ultimate faithful and righteous one, Jesus. Jesus. The once and forever Passover lamb. The once and forever Passover lamb. Verse 26, it was to show his righteousness at the present time. In other words, this is real time. This is real time. To show his righteousness. Real time. So that he might be just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. Paul wants to make sure we really grasp it. The just one, the righteous one, justifies everyone who activates this trust, relying on Jesus. Paul wraps it up, starting in verse 27. He says, then what becomes of our boasting? He's already referenced a couple of times that too many people are they're trying to act like they're big and mighty, like they can work their way into righteousness, like they can work their way into right relationship with God. And so he says, what becomes of boasting? It's excluded, he says. By what kind of law? By law of works? No. Watch what he says. But by the law of faith. The law of faith. For we hold that one is justified by faith apart from the works of the law. Or is God the God of Jews only? Verse 29, is he not the God of Gentiles also? Yes, of Gentiles also, all the rest of us. Since God is one, this is foundational truth, God is one, who will justify the circumcised by faith and the uncircumcised through faith. Do we then overthrow the law by this faith? By no means. There it is again. By no means. On the contrary, we uphold the law. God's promises reflected in the ancient scriptures are fulfilled. This is a law of faith. It's always been a law of faith. It's always been a road of trust. The way to be right with God has always been about trusting him. Christ transforms us from wrong to right, so trust him and boldly, lovingly tell others. Four marvelous apps as we finish right now. Four marvelous apps, four applications. Number one, turn from your old ways chained by sin and death and trust Christ. Turn and trust. Turn from the old path you've been on, if it's been one of, I'll do it on my own. Turn from that. Trust him. If it's been one of just do whatever I want, whenever I want, live it up. Turn from that. Trust him, his righteousness, his good and righteous ways. Trust Christ. Second app, read Mark's gospel this week. I told you as we started the year, this was going to be our year in the gospels as a church. And we finished first quarter. A bunch of you were reading through Matthew. Time to jump into Mark. Jump into Mark this week and watch for words like wonderful, amazing, good news, mercy, the gospel. Watch for the gospel all over Mark's gospel. Third app, sign up for ManorServes. Let's live like Jesus. Remember what he said to us a few moments ago? Even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. To give his life as a ransom for many, we have the opportunity in these coming couple of weeks to give ourselves away. And it is the essence of walking like Jesus, being like Jesus, becoming more like him. There's a myriad of wonderful ways to serve in the couple coming weeks. And this is just a great launching pad for us as a church into serving more and more. So I invite you to jump there on the app and sign up. And number four, overcome some distance this week. We all have those spots with various people in our lives where we sense that distance we were talking about. Overcome it this week, a little bit more of it. Deliberately move towards somebody else with some gracious intentionality this week. Okay, I'm done. Let's stand. We're gonna sing some more. Let's sing.